He's with a partner in the firm of Huckvale, Wild, Harvey, and McClellan, lawyers and mediators in Lethbridge. He's been an active member of the Law Society of Alberta since 1985 and attended the U of A. And he attended Virginia State University also, where he studied environmental law. We're very happy to have him talk today on a timely issue, Parliament's review of judicial appointments, which is a totally new thing for Canada to be trying out. And I welcome Cam McClellan today.
Thank you and good afternoon. I would like to take the opportunity to try to describe, the new process that's currently being contemplated by Parliament, and particularly the Prime Minister's office, in having some public review of judicial appointments, particularly as it concerns the Supreme Court of Canada. And so what I'd like to do is just give some first initial thoughts generally about the process of what a judge is really supposed to do, what is his job, to talk about the current Canadian process, and also to use as a contrast the American process. I have the benefit of having practiced law. I've had the benefit of practicing law in the United States as well. So in addition to being a member of the Law Society of Alberta since 1985, I'm also a member of the Virginia State Bar and practice with a law firm of 500 lawyers in Virginia from 1991 through 1994. So I remain an active member of the Virginia State Bar, and I'm somewhat conversant with the laws of the United States. And I think that adds a nice contrast to where we are in Canada. Now, firstly, what does a judge do? What is his or her job? I'm going to suggest to you that their job is to interpret the law. So a parliament or a legislature will define the law through an act, but the judge then is called upon to, as cases are presented through a controversy, called upon to really determine and define and consider how the law should be applied to the facts at hand. Now, I just want to use as a reference base the context of the judge as a law, not as a lawgiver necessarily, but in a sense, in a particular, as we look at a specific case as a lawgiver. And here's a quote from the first Earl of Birkenhead when he was practicing law. He lived from 1872 to 1930. A lawyer, Mr. Smith, was appearing before him. And here's the conversation from the judge. "What do you suppose I'm on the bench for, Mr. Smith?" Mr. Smith: "It is not for me, Your Honor, to attempt to fathom the inscrutable workings of Providence. I have read your case, Mr. Smith, and I am no wiser now than I was when I started. Possibly not, my lord, but far better informed. You are extremely offensive, young man. As a matter of fact, we both are. And the only difference between us is that I am trying to be, and you can't help it." And that highlights in a sort of a way the challenge that a judge has in trying to respond to the cases and controversies that are brought before him or her. Now, to put this in context then, our current Prime Minister wanted the appointment of Supreme Court justices to be subject to some form of public review. And I'm just going to read from his official news release, and this is what it states. "The Supreme Court is a vital institution that belongs to all Canadians. I believe the public deserves to know more about the individuals appointed to serve there and the method by which they are appointed. A public hearing is an unprecedented step in this direction. It will bring more openness and accountability to the process of appointing people to our nation's highest court." Now, that in the interest of promoting more openness and accountability, the ad hoc committee to review a nominee for the Supreme Court of Canada will publicly interview the nominee to the Supreme Court, and that, of course, occurred this past Monday. Now, in response to that suggestion, the Canadian Bar Association, which is, I'll call it the formal organization that represents lawyers in the country, they responded and suggested that the Prime Minister's desire was probably misplaced. And this is their position, again, from the message from the President, Brian A. Tabor, Queen's Counsel. The CBA does not approve of any process that would create the impression that Supreme Court justices report to Parliament, that they are beholden to members of the very government that they will undoubtedly be required to judge. And so, rather than having an ad hoc parliamentary committee, the suggestion from the CBA, the Canadian Bar Association, was that they would have a televised public introduction of the new Supreme Court justice under the supervision of the CBA, and that they would use a criteria where they would have a respected journalist who would kind of moderate, and they would have a selected group of parliamentarians, judges, lawyers, and citizens who would then respond. Of course, the CBA's suggestion was not effectively responded to by the government. Now, yesterday, Stephen Harper, as the Prime Minister of Canada, formally appointed Justice Marshall Rothstein as the newest member of Canada's highest court. Judge Rothstein replaces Mr. Justice John Major, who retired from the Supreme Court in December. Now, Justice Major is from Calgary, and it is tradition in Canada that we have, from our nine-member court, we have three sit from Ontario, three from Quebec, and three from other parts of the country. Traditionally, one of those would be from the prairies. So the suggestion was that since Justice Major was retiring from the court as a prairie-appointed member, that we would get a prairie appointee as a new member. And so there was a short list presented, and from that short list, Justice Rothstein was then appointed by the Prime Minister. Now, those of you who may have seen some summary of his hearing on Monday will have, I guess, the benefit of some insight as to how he articulated himself and how he held himself out. But for me, and my personal opinion, was that he acquitted himself very well and inspired confidence in the legal system, and particularly probably in the judiciary. So what I thought I would like to do is just give you a very brief summary of Justice Rothstein's circumstances, his background, and then move on to discuss the American experience and just contrast that, and then suggest or propose some outcomes. Justice Rothstein was born December 25th, 1940, in Winnipeg. He's educated in Winnipeg schools at the University of Manitoba. He graduated initially with a Bachelor of Commerce in 1962 and then a law degree in 1966. He was called to the bar in Manitoba in 1966, married in 1966 to Sheila Dorfman of Montreal, and now has four children and two grandchildren. He initially practiced law in Winnipeg with a private firm from 1966 to 1992. And he developed an expertise in transportation law, competition law, and commercial law. He also taught at the University of Manitoba in the Faculty of Law, and was well received in that regard, having done so for 20 years. Now, in respect of his judicial career, he was appointed a member of the Federal Court of Canada, which is really a court that most of us have very little experience with. Our experience in Alberta, for instance, primarily is with the Provincial Court of Alberta or the Court of Queen's Bench. But the Federal Court, there's a trial division and an appellate division, and that court's jurisdiction is primarily to deal with matters strictly of federal responsibility. Patents, trademarks, immigration, circumstances like that. To some degree also Aboriginal issues. So he became a member of that court in 1992, and he remained there until 1999, when he was appointed as a judge of the Federal Court of Canada Appeal Division. He also has been appointed as a judge of the Court Martial Appeal Court of Canada, as a judicial member of the Competition Tribunal, and as a member of the committees and special committees of NAFTA regulations, and that was done more recently in 2004. So I think my personal opinion and my observations is that Canada is very fortunate to have an individual like Justice Rothstein as a member of the Supreme Court. Certainly a wealth of experience as a lawyer and as a judge, and I think that he presented himself very well when he did appear before the ad hoc committee on Monday. Now, with what Canada has done in mind, I just want to contrast the American experience. And fortunately, we do have some very recent American experience to comment on. And just to explain the difference, or to highlight what the American approach, I'm going to just explain very briefly what they do when a Supreme Court justice is appointed. A vacancy in the U.S. Supreme Court triggers a rare convergence of the highest levels of the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches. The president nominates a candidate, the Senate holds confirmation hearings, and ultimately votes on the individual. And then the Chief Justice of the Court swears in the newest member of the 9-person panel. The U.S. Constitution assigns the president the power to nominate. The U.S. Constitution gives the Senate, and it's very, those of you who may have read it, it's very succinct in its description. It simply says that the Senate has advice and consent power over federal court appointees. So a Senate Judiciary Committee holds public hearings. Now, just for information, 5 of the last 6 nominees in the United States spent less than a week being quizzed by the judiciary panel. The exception was Justice Clarence Thomas. You may remember that. There was a young woman who suggested Mr. Justice Thomas was inappropriate in his dealings with her as when he was working with the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission. And so that became quite a cause for media celebration. Certainly there was lots of coverage. Now, if we look, though, in the United States just recently, in 2005, we've seen 2 individuals appointed and confirmed as members of the U.S. Supreme Court. First, Justice John Roberts, who was nominated by the president initially he was going to be nominated to take over the position for Sandra Day O'Connor from Arizona. She was retiring. But in the course of events, Justice Rehnquist, the Chief Justice of the Court, died. And President Bush nominated Justice Roberts, who had an experience as an appellate court justice in their federal court system, to be the Chief Justice of the Court. He was before the Senate Judiciary Committee for 3 or 4 days and was impressive to everyone. His confirmation went ahead without a hitch. The next step in the process then, since Justice Rehnquist had died and Justice Roberts was appointed to take his position, there then became another vacancy because Sandra Day O'Connor was still intending to retire. And so initially, you may remember what happened is in October, President Bush nominated a woman, Harriet Myers, who is his White House legal counsel, to be the Supreme Court nominee. And that created a firestorm of response, so much so that within 3 or 4 days, she actually withdrew her name from the nomination. I think personally she was certainly a very experienced lawyer. She was the head or managing partner of a very substantial law firm in Texas and certainly had lots of experience. But the American press and the American public expressed concern with her qualifications, and she determined on her own that she did not want to face the firestorm that was going to be associated with the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings. So shortly thereafter, President Bush nominated Samuel Alito. And Mr. Alito had experienced 15 years as a member of a court of appeal in the federal court system in the United States. And initially, again, there was a suggestion that he was far too conservative and was likely to change some of the precedent that had been established by the Supreme Court during the Rehnquist years and before, and would face a difficult confirmation fight for his nomination. That didn't bear itself out. He has been confirmed, and he has been sworn in as the newest justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. Now, in all of that then, I would suggest to you that if we compare the Canadian experience, which is just developing, and we are all capable of having just as a valid opinion as anyone else on, with the American experience, it appears that we have an interest in wanting more openness, wanting more accountability, but being unsure and unclear about how we should go about accomplishing that. And I am wondering really what are the benefits to Canada of having a open hearing process. One of them would be, well, we know who we're going to get. But if we don't have a process that requires that nominee to be accountable through some kind of vote or otherwise, what do we get other than simply an introduction into the person? If we want an introduction into the person, we could certainly make inquiries of the media. We could go on to the internet and we could get all the information that we'd like to find out about the particular nominee. For instance, Justice Rothstein, in his circumstance, you can find his curriculum vitae, a list of all of his decisions, online at any time. So, are we better off for having had gone through this experience this past Monday? I would suggest that the one true benefit for Canadians probably is the fact that people have a sense that somehow their feelings are important enough to parliamentarians and to the Prime Minister in particular, such that it would be appropriate that they have some opportunity to listen to and consider the presentation from a Supreme Court nominee. But practically, I don't think we got an insight on Monday, nor do I think we will in the future get any benefit from a public hearing which simply trots someone out for presentation and which has no real impact on whether they will ultimately be nominated by a Prime Minister to serve in the court. Notwithstanding, we have a tendency to sometimes challenge what happens in the United States. I would suggest that the course of history has borne out that the process has been quite successful and that people do have a better insight and a better feeling for who they're getting when they are subject to some form of nomination process that requires a vote at the outcome of that process. And again, what's happened in 2005 in the United States, I believe, has borne that out. Despite tremendous polarization in the political community in the United States, both judges who were nominated by the president were certainly confirmed by the Senate, and with no real media firestorm. Notwithstanding, there are some who hold political views that are inconsistent with those maintained by the actual nominees who have now been appointed. The Canadian judicial system, I think, is in very strong hands. The judges who have been appointed and are serving have, I think, acquitted themselves very well, and they have the confidence of the bar who appears before them. Whether that is true from the Canadian public, of course, is hard to say because I have such a biased position that I really wouldn't be able to offer any kind of insight into that. But I would suggest that what we should consider for the future is, where does a open confirmation process get us? Does it actually accomplish what the Prime Minister would like us to see, which is more openness? Probably. More accountability? Probably not. Nonetheless, I think it is a step in the right direction, but I don't see us moving to the American system simply because we lack the constitutional history and probably the political support that would require on such a nonpartisan issue. And after we enjoy lunch, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to respond. Thank you.
That was a perfect
Thank you so much, Cam. That was just the perfect length. And I should have said that I'm your moderator today. I'm stepping in, actually, as a sort of substitute moderator. My name's Jill Kokas. And, of course, we welcome everybody to enjoy lunch now. And then we'll, after about a 20-minute break, we'll be asking Cam to come and respond to questions. We do want to remind you at this time that our fundraising event is scheduled for March 31st, a really elaborate dinner here with John Gilchrist, the food critic on the CBC, as our guest and our entertainment speaker. We're ready to sell you tickets. We'd like you to bring all your friends. We're going to have a very wonderful evening here, and the tickets are available now from myself, from Susan, from Terry, and any of the other committee people, Diane Pointer, and we'd encourage you to think seriously about attending that evening. Thank you very much, and enjoy the lunch.